This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. With 2018 wrapping up, we thought we'd take a look back at some of the year's biggest stories, and I'm not going to make that decision, so I've got some folks in here to help me with that task. Nancy Kaffer is a columnist, a member of the editorial board at the Free Press. Joel Kurth is managing editor at Bridge Magazine. Nancy, let's start with you. Biggest stories of 2018.
Okay, the biggest story of 2018, and in fact, every year of the last, like, two, 3 decades, and probably the next two, 3 decades going forward, is Detroit Public Schools. We have the largest student population in the state in the city of Detroit. We have traditional public schools. We have charter schools. Across the board are not performing to an adequate level. There is no mystery about this. There is not even really a mystery about what we need to do to improve student performance. Study after study has said you have to spend more money to educate at-risk kids, kids who live in poverty, kids who are learning English, kids with special needs, which we have a higher population
of in Detroit. That's not what the Republicans in the legislature say, though.
And yet, interesting. I wonder where their children go to school. So we have this large student population that is being horribly underserved, not getting the education these students are entitled to. And year after year, we just kind of go, huh, well, that's too bad.
Well, no, year after year, you have, every 5 years, you have a new plan.
Right,
a new
right.
superintendent yeah. and a new holistic plan. We're going to roll. It's like the Lions, yeah, basically. We're going to tear it all down and start over again.
We're very, very comfortable with using Detroit children as sort of experimental subjects in the latest plan du jour about how to fix education.
Poverty lab.
Joel, your number one story for 2018.
I got to go with the continued fallout and horror show that is Michigan State University in the wake of the Larry Nassar criminal enterprise going on there. I mean, you know, it's started the year with the president stepping down, ending it with the president, Lou Anna Simon, getting charged with 4 felonies. In between, you had the supposed great fixer, John Engler, coming in to clean up the problem and doubling it down and making it worse by bungling a $500 million settlement to 350 victims of sexual assault. I mean, it doesn't get much worse, and I feel like it's yet another example in Michigan that we've seen in the past few years of just shattering public trust in cherished institutions. It goes back to Flint. Now the largest public university is just embroiled in scandal, and you don't know when it's going to end.
John Engler, you know, he hasn't really been in public life since, what, 2000?
They went to the Wayback Machine for that.
He must have been so surprised to find that you can't publicly trash victims of sexual assault anymore.
Right.
It's not okay anymore.
The rules have changed a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. What a shock.
I don't
for
think
him.
He got the memo.
Like a bucket of cold water.
But it was
in
like
the
they were going to bring in, Tony Soprano to fix the sexual assault
it
problem.
It was, your former colleague and my, Daniel Howells at the Detroit News, who is a guy who is a very, strongly rooted in the business community, brings a strong business lens to the commentary he gives. And Howes said, this is the wrong choice, the wrong pick, the wrong guy. Engler is not the person to fix this mess. And I just wish they had listened to him.
It was eyebrow raising from the get-go because it was, as you said, it was like from the Wayback Machine and it was from a different era. And it shows again how tone deaf and how out of step the people who are making the decisions at MSU are. And you know, I just go back to the fact that it's like, well, like my family goes to has all graduated from MSU. And it occupies a huge place in people's heart. To speak nothing of the victims, but it's just people can't look at it the same again, and they haven't righted the ship yet.
Well, and you say it's been botched from day one. You know, PR experts say the thing that MSU should have done was say, we messed up. We're going to figure out how to become a national leader.
Like Pennsylvania did.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
A national leader in having a safe campus. They didn't do that. They have just been weird about the whole thing. That you have a lot of people on the board who seem very invested in the idea that their presence on the board is integral, and former President Simon's leadership of the university was somehow integral to the success of the institution. And that, I think, happens when people are in place for too long. Sometimes they confuse their success with the success of the institution. You should never be the linchpin of your institution's success. If that's the case, you're doing it wrong.
Well, the mentality always from the get-go, from the start, was that they were going to protect the institution first, and the victims were always sort of an afterthought. So I think you had a bunker mentality going into it that just doubled down.
But that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what the institution was. The institution wasn't them and their reputations and their ability to lead it. The institution is the people who comprise it, and that includes the victims of this assault. That includes the families like yours who are invested in it. That includes future, current students, past students. I mean, and again, these victims. An institution is made up of people. It's not some, you know, artificial entity that isn't. I mean, it's they seem to have that deep misunderstanding.
It's not Luann Simon and company and Joel Ferguson and the crew. It's 40,000 people plus exponentially more alumni plus the victims plus their families plus. I mean, you know, you talk about 6 degrees of separation in Michigan. It's 2 degrees of separation with Michigan State.
I'll make 2 points about that. Number one, they made this a much, much worse story for the media to grab hold of it. And, you know, it could have been something that lasted 3 or 4 months. And instead, it's just continuing and will continue. The other thing is I want to put in a plug for my colleagues at Michigan Radio who put together this podcast called Believed. If you've not heard Believed, I really encourage you. You cannot understand this Nassar scandal and how he got away with this for so long without hearing this. It's appalling in some ways and really just breathtaking in others.
You guys have done outstanding reporting on this whole thing along the way. It's been very difficult to listen to a lot of it, but really instructive.
It's great. It's a horror show.
Let's go to your number two story of 2018.
The number two, also a story that's a big story every year, the Wayne County tax foreclosure auction.
Yeah.
We had a lot of movement on that this year. Well, that's probably the wrong way to put it. We had a lot more attention of maybe a kind that suggests that people are waking up to the fact that this is an ongoing disaster for Detroit and Wayne County. We hadn't really had any movement on fixing it, but the first step is to understand it's a problem.
Fixing it at the government level, because there are a lot of volunteer groups out there trying to help people.
There absolutely are, and this is what's so frustrating about it. I wrote a column several months ago saying they just needed to stop having the auction, because there have been millions, if not billions by now, of dollars put in to blunting the devastating impacts of this auction. You know, volunteer groups, wonderful, wonderful saint-like people who work tirelessly to try to keep people in their homes, people who are foreclosed on for really paltry sums of money and who this foreclosures do devastating damage to Detroit neighborhoods. And but all this work to try to make the auction not be harmful, it's like taking a very sharp knife and trying to wrap it in bubble wrap. At the end of the day, it's still a knife, and you've had a lot of effort to try to make the knife not be harmful. But, like, maybe let's just put down the knife.
I've lost track of how many foreclosures there have been since 2003. At one point, it was 1 in 3 houses in Detroit have been foreclosed. I'm sure it's much more than that now. What I find appalling about that situation, and as well as the Detroit water shutoff situation, is the lack of attention being paid to it by other groups. As you said, there's small volunteer groups, but there's nothing on an institutional level. Like, for instance, I don't necessarily fault the county treasurer for trying to collect taxes. I think he could do a lot better job at it. I think he's done a poor job at it, as fact. But his job is to collect the money. But there's not a larger effort from foundations or charities or other big groups to try to step in and identify this as a problem. You're asking the tax man to solve a societal problem, and I think that's a fundamental mistake.
And the tax man's been asking the legislature to change the law so he doesn't have to follow the law.
But this is one of the problems. One of the problems is that there's this round robin of blamesmanship, right? The treasurer goes, oh, I have to have the auction. The law requires me to. And then the legislature says, oh, this is a local issue. I mean, there's this sort of passing of the buck here. And, you know, one of the things that someone pointed out to me that's so mysterious about how this auction goes is you drive around the city, see all these signs up about how you can get on a payment plan, how you can pay your taxes. How much information do you see that helps people understand how to pay their taxes on time? It's like the whole system is set up that once you are in foreclosure, there's this limited array of tools to help you.
Well, as you know, the dirty little secret in Wayne County is that the tax foreclosure helps balance the budget.
Yep.
And, you know, it was interesting that Warren Evans, when he was sheriff of Wayne County, called for a moratorium on mortgage foreclosures during the mortgage meltdown. But now that he is the treasurer, he's been
County
executive. I promise not to lie today. for at least 18 minutes. But and then he's been silent, basically silent, ever since he took office.
So there's actually a lawsuit working its way up to the Michigan Supreme Court right now that has worked its way to the Michigan Supreme Court, filed on behalf of an Oakland County property owner whose home was foreclosed on for like $8 or something and then auctioned off for $20,000+. In other states, when your property is auctioned, the county does not pocket the difference between what you owe and what the auction price was. The reason that the auction is so lucrative for Wayne County is because in Michigan, the treasurer's office is able to collect, if you owe $500 and your house auctions for $3,000, the treasurer gets to keep not just the value of the back taxes and some fees and stuff, but that whole sum. In other states, the difference is remitted to the former property owner. So that would be a good step. This lawsuit, if the Michigan Supreme Court rules in the favor of the property owners, could really upend the whole auction system statewide. So when I say that I'm seeing some movement this year that makes me hopeful that we're going to potentially get somewhere, there's just little things like that happen. Little things. A big lawsuit at the Michigan Supreme Court. Little thing. But we're seeing some things happen that suggests that there's possibility.
Let's go with your number two story.
Water everywhere. Now it's really poisoned. If you ask anyone in Michigan what makes Michigan great, it's the Great Lakes. It's the abundance of fresh water around us. But we've seen continual assaults on our fresh water from Nestle up north extracting, I don't know how many gallons a minute of
all
water.
The gallons.
Over the protest of 80,000 people. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You've had the PFAS chemical contaminations that are popping up everywhere. You have the Line 5 controversy over the gas pipeline going through the most beautiful spot in Michigan, the Straits of Mackinac. You have continual problems replacing lead pipes in Flint. And, you know, this ongoing catastrophe, I think, of water shutoffs in Detroit, where you've seen it's down now from 30,000 a year to 10,000 a year. I did an article recently that shows that you still have upwards of 5,000 people whose water got shut off this year that don't have water 3 months later. So I think, you know, we're starting to see this just continual assault on water. And, you know, Nancy said that it's going to be an issue. Detroit schools are going to be an issue for 20 years. I see water as the predominant issue in Michigan's future for the next century.
I could not agree with you more. And I think it's great reporting, by the way, because one of the things that has been particularly hard for me to figure out is how many people just lost water and have never had it restored. I don't know that they track that. They have not done a great job of tracking completion of payment plans. They like to talk really about how many people get on payment plans, but that doesn't tell you how many people complete them, how many people return to them
right.
after they have cleared one debt. And this is access to water is not it's not like a frivolous thing. It's sort of a hallmark of civilization.
Right. You know, when I see the bills, I hear about the bills out of Detroit, out of Flint, out of Ypsilanti for that matter, and I compare them to my bills, I'm thinking, man, that's what happens when you abandon a city and you have all that infrastructure left behind. You've got this huge, huge amount of funds going into nothing.
That is true. But if we make this solely an urban poor issue, I think we're really neglecting a lot of root causes. You're seeing communities, rich communities like Oxford, Michigan, and Oakland County, whose water bills have quadrupled in the past year. Water bills are on the rise 20% nationwide. This is going to be something that's going to approach a cable bill pretty soon.
And the reality is we built out all these water systems in the 70s and a time when there was all this federal money to build these things. That doesn't exist anymore. So we built a bunch of stuff. Now we have to pay to maintain it. No one really wants to do that. And that's kind of a problem all around. That's a problem with schools. It's a problem with roads. It's a problem with water. Nobody wants to spend money to make stuff work like we feel like it should.
Well, building stuff is fun, but maintaining it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to. Yeah, nobody likes fixing their plumbing. It's not like buying a new sofa. You don't feel a great feeling of pride when you flush your toilet and it does what it ought to. But at the same time, if it doesn't, that's a problem.
Okay, we're running out of time. I really thought we'd be able to get a lot more in. So here's what I want to ask both of you. What stories in 2018 did not get enough attention by reporters?
This is a little off the beaten path, but I think it's 36th District Court in Detroit. This is a court that serves 420,000 cases a year. That's about 1 in 20 Michigan residents. This year, they, among other indignities to defendants, they banned the use of pens in the building because they bought some new artwork. So defendants and people who are in their families can't take notes on their defense or write a note to their attorney. They're not enforcing rental ordinances. They're evicting 40,000 people a year through these rocket dockets, and they also have a new collections system that throws people in jail if they don't pay civil fines.
Story that's undercovered.
I don't know if this is a Michigan-specific story, but we've seen a lot of coverage in the last year and a half of the Me Too movement of women speaking out against high-profile accusers or assaulters who, in some cases, have lost their careers, whether for a short or a long term. But what we don't hear a lot about is, you know, and I'm not trying to minimize the impacts of assault or harassment, no matter what level of a profession you're at. If you're it's just as degrading and awful. If you're doing all right financially, it's still a horrible experience to go through. But what we don't still have is a way for, like, if you're a lady working like a shift at Arby's whose manager harasses her, we have really yet to, a way to figure out how to help women who don't have the same kind of privilege and power and resources that some of the more high-profile folks do. And I don't know that we've done a great job of covering what these circumstances are like for women who are far more vulnerable and who have far fewer resources to push back.
The story I'd like to see to get covered more by our colleagues is the fact that we've got a legislature, a term-limited legislature from a variety of different vocations who come in and decide they know more than the educated experts within the agencies do about science and about health and about all these other things, and basically are trying to take away their ability to do their job. I just can't imagine the hubris that's behind that.
There's a great Edgar Allan Poe quote, "I have great faith in fools, self-confidence, my friends call it."
You're saying that politicians have hubris? <It's> like, what?
That is Joel Kurth. He's managing editor at Bridge Magazine. We also heard from Nancy Kaffer. She's a columnist and member of the editorial board at the Free Press. I've really enjoyed this. Next time we do this over beers.
Absolutely. I thought there was beer tonight.
Nope, sorry.
Thanks, Lester.
Thank you.